The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
Now, my next guest is an investigative journalist who's written extensively on current affairs and politics in Ireland over the last 30 years. And his work has helped to contribute to the setting up of two judicial tribunals in the past, with also the publication of numerous books in which he details accounts of explosive stories that rocked Irish society. His new book is called United Nation, The Case for Integrating Ireland, and it delves into the timely question of a united Ireland and the possibility of integrating the 32 counties north and south. Frank Connolly, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, this book, it's a strange creature in a way because it's making the case for a united Ireland, but I was looking for the economics. Well, and it's not about economics.
It's not just about economics, although there's a considerable part when, in fact, the opening chapters, after I talk about constitutional issues and the playing out of the Good Friday Agreement, because, of course, as we know, it has two core points in the agreement. One, that nothing can change without the consent of the majority of people in the North when it comes to unity. And secondly, that the people of Ireland have a right to decide when it looks like there might be a possibility that the people of Ireland have a right to decide whether the country should be unified.
Now, it's interesting on that front because if there is to be a referendum, which is specified in the Good Friday Agreement, it doesn't say how that's to be run and what majority there might be, because we've seen with Brexit where you get a squeaky narrow majority for Brexit and look at the chaos it caused.
Well, the Good Friday Agreement has a specific clause that a referendum, if it was passed, could be passed by 50 plus one of the vote north in separate referendums, but concurrent referendums north and south. But the point is, there is no point in us aiming to bring together the people of Ireland based on such a narrow majority. The objective of this exercise and what the point of the book about is about is to show how we could bring together and develop an all-Ireland economy. In fact, it's already happening, and not least because of the decision by the British people to leave Europe.
The protocol, by the way, as it's working currently, has generated massive North-South trade.
That's one of the effects of the protocol has been to generate, as you say, a huge increase in North-South trade, which is part and parcel of building and constructing the all-Ireland economy. So the economy is a crucial part of this. But you're right, it's not just about the economy. It's about how we can bring together an all-Ireland health service, and the lessons of COVID apply there, because I think any practitioner, and I've spoken, as you say, to huge numbers of people in interviews for this book across health, across education, constitutional law, policing, international relations, all of the areas that we'll need to think about when we talk about the emergence of a new Ireland, from debate and discussion that has to take place. It's not going to happen soon, but the preparation has to be made.
The problem would be, what about the diehard unionist, the diehard loyalist? What's in it for them?
Well, I think the issue there is that times are changing, and I think we can see that in the reaction of unionism, for instance, at the moment, to our sections of unionism to the protocol. But let me bring you back to the key point. Everything changed with Brexit. 56% of the people in the North voted against leaving the European Union. They include a significant number of people from the unionist cultural background. Clearly, they include huge numbers from the nationalist community, and indeed those who don't affiliate to either the unionist or nationalist designation, as it's called. So, recently, the protocol vote was very similar. In other words, the people who voted in the recent elections in the North was about 56% of people who were not against the application of the protocol. So I think we're moving. The bigger picture is, demographically, politically, we're moving in a particular direction. And of course, this referendum has to happen every 7 years under the terms of can happen every 7 years under the terms of the Good Friday Agreement. So I think it's really a question of bringing everybody together to look at what's possible. And firstly, to start, and Michael D. Higgins, who gives an interview, the president gives an interview in this book, we start with what we agree on. We sit down and we say, what's best in the best interests, long-term interests of the children and grandchildren of people from each community in the North, and those who don't affiliate to either unionism or nationalism.
Now, the economics might easily be resolved in truth. I had always hoped that within the EU, while the United Kingdom was within the EU, that eventually it would make no difference. Okay, there would still be driving driving miles an hour in the north and kilometres per hour in the south. But as far as daily living went, it would just be the same country. You know, when the checkpoints went down and all the rest of it, it's almost like the same country except for red pillar boxes versus green and all of that. But then Brexit came along and it screwed up that gradual process that might have brought us to where we wanted to be.
When Boris Johnson met Macron after he took over from Theresa May in the summer of 2019, Macron was asked by journalists what would be the best way to get around this problem of the border and the situation in Ireland. And Macron said, well, clearly an all-Ireland economy and society within the European Union would be the best solution. But of course, we can't dictate that. And that's speaking for the logic of what's happened since Ireland and Britain joined the European Union, since the euro was introduced, and most importantly, since Brexit. So we're in a new situation where the logic, economic, demographic, political, is all moving in one direction.
But what do you offer to those who think less about economics and more about tradition and where they believe they come from, loyalty to the crown and so on? What can you offer them? I mean, there's no possibility of something like joint sovereignty. That is just not on. So what do you offer to preserve those traditions for those who want them and those loyalties?
Well,
an independent Ireland.
Yeah, there's two issues there. One is the protections that are guaranteed under the Good Friday Agreement and underwritten by both the European Union, the US and the two governments, British and Irish. And that is that the identity, the allegiances of every single person are protected, whether that is a British identity and allegiance or an Irish identity and allegiance. And that applied under the Good Friday Agreement before we get to the stage of a referendum and what happens, a transition after a referendum, if people decide to vote in the north in favour of unification and in the south. But the other issue is that those guarantees are about providing people with decent standards of living, with proper healthcare system, with a proper education system. Why would you want to join a country where you can't afford to pay rent or buy a house? Why would you want to join a society where there are deep and a massive dysfunctionality in our health and other systems? That applies on both sides at the moment in this country.
And
both
there's no doubt that if you laid out a menu and people made the comparisons and cost of living, taxation, social welfare, there'd be deficits and positives on both sides of the border in different categories.
And that's what this book is looking at, the situation of all of those things, health, education, social welfare in North and South, and how they could be brought together, and indeed how two civil societies, two administrations and legal systems could be brought together.
Going back, no one wants to return to violence. We know that how the trouble started and so on, and there was nationalist violence and there was loyalist violence and so on. The likelihood of nationalist violence has probably now declined to virtually zero. There are a few dissident Republicans who might make trouble. So the anticipation would be, if this were to be brought about, there would be a backlash from loyalism and there would be loyalist-inspired violence.
I've spoken to the loyalists and loyalists who were former members of those paramilitary groups who were part of the British response to Republican and nationalist violence and unrest. But the point about what their response is, and I spoke to senior former UVF men, is that they don't believe, firstly, there is any basis for a campaign of violence. There will, of course,
be. But there'll be younger people. There'll be hotheads.
There are younger people who are being, at the moment, in recent riots, and I look into what happened in 2021 in April over the Easter period in Belfast, but also some surrounding areas. These were young kids out in the streets. They were burning cars and burning rubbish bins and indeed buses on occasion, but they don't represent the majority of ordinary working class loyalists. So, in this current situation.
So suppose you got policing and health and social welfare, all of those things ironed out in the fullness of time. I don't know how long that might take. Maybe there'd be help from the EU who'd love to see this thing happen, the whole island back in under the EU banner. But what could you offer the loyalists? Could you offer them, for example, membership of the Commonwealth, especially if the monarch was no longer the boss of the Commonwealth? It becomes a club of ex Which we are definitively one.
Yeah, I put that actually, funnily enough, to a former EU commissioner, or member of the senior member of the commission. And of course, it wouldn't actually suit the EU, as you say, who are going to be very important in this long-term process of transition to a united Ireland, or an integrated Ireland, as I call it. That would be a step back. The point is, the guarantees that are given.
Now,
to
why would that be a step back, Frank? Because if the monarch is no longer in charge, there can't be this thing of anti-royalists. It's just a club of countries that used to be bossed by Britain, but no longer are.
Well, as you say, it's not the most important or significant body of countries in the
world.
Not
at all. But would it be the SOP that would be required?
I don't actually think that's what unionist community or the loyalist community in the North are looking for. What they're looking for are other more concrete assurances about their future. And that is a guarantee they can retain their British culture, their identity, and their rights.
And passport.
And more importantly, and indeed their entitlement. Now to hold both sure. British and Irish passports, and many, many people in the unionist community are taking out Irish passports, as you know, which is another sign of what's happening in the change, the underlying change that's going on in the country.
Yeah. Will there be an issue if you've got one section of the population who happen to live north of the border who can have a British passport and the rest of us living south of the border can't?
Well, I'm not sure if how many of us out of the border need or want a British
passport.
You
never know.
But the point is,
visa-free access to maybe particular countries.
I think the Irish passport, as it is probably the most powerful one, one of the most powerful ones in the world. But leaving that aside, people have a right to hold citizenship, both a British and Irish citizenship, those who were born in the North after a certain period of time. I think that's the reality, and that will continue to be so. And people have a right to their European citizenship. Citizenship, which I think is what particularly younger people in the North from all communities are looking to. And that's where the drive is coming from. That's where the momentum. And not only that, it's very important to say that the nationalist people in the North who agreed to a Good Friday Agreement have a right to aspire to become part of an all-Ireland solution. And they are increasingly driving this momentum for change.
The book is called United Nation, The Case for Integrating Ireland. It's published by Gill Books and its author is Frank Connolly. Frank, thank you very much for joining us in studio today.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.